What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, March 21st, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside returning co-host, Christian Phillips. Yay!
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
If somebody's seeing this for the first time, they don't know who you are. They somehow missed your titular performance on Christian Kinda Funny Games Daily. You like what I did there? Toss that in there.
Nice.
Thank you. What would they know you for? What's your role here in the video game industry, Christian?
General vagabond at the moment.
Oh, okay, great.
But
okay.
Yeah, no. It's actually kind of cool. I realized that today's actually my 25th wedding anniversary.
Glad you're celebrating it with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Dragged my poor video game widow up from San Diego. Most people probably know me from my time most recently. Last 13 years, I ran the San Diego studio.
Yeah.
In charge of MLB The Show.
Sure.
Other great hits in the past, like
My Nation Racers. Get it right there. Fuck yeah, My Nation Racers. You know that. Yeah.
Sports Champions, and then a handful of other titles that, you know, maybe you slip through some cracks. But Star Blood Arena, PlayStation VR, 1 year anniversary coming up too.
Wow.
So
that's crazy too.
Yep. So that's, yeah. And then I actually Sony and I parted ways just over a year ago now.
Yeah.
And for the last year I've been with the guys at White Moon Dreams.
Okay.
And came on as a partner there and the president at White Moon. So
what are you guys working on?
Well, we're working on a couple unannounced
projects.
Yeah,
I almost had you.
Yeah. But some good stuff. We've got something that we're self-funding, and we're shopping, and some pretty advanced talks. It's an action RPG.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We'll start off in the PC space, so we're pretty excited
about
that. Okay. And then, we're still dabbling in PSVR. We've got, we do a lot of work in China.
Yeah.
So we've got some things cooking. We're pretty excited. GDC's been very fruitful.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good.
So it's been great.
What is it like for you as a developer to be at GDC? You know, I mean, I think that's one of the things we've had a bunch of different hosts on so far, but they're, you know, it's Khalif, it's Danny, it's going to be Jason Schreier tomorrow. There are more people from my world. For you as a developer here, especially somebody who's like helping not start something new the company was going, but like, you know, do something brand new, make these new IPs or new video games. What is it like to go to GDC? GDC day look like for you?
Yeah, no, great question, because I've been actually ruminating on this a lot this week, because it's been such a polar opposite experience this year.
Really? Right? A brand new game developers conference for you.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I used to always just kind of feel maybe borderline out of place as a publisher coming to GDC and you know, obviously taking meetings and hearing great pitches and meeting with developers, but it's a far different show for me this year. I'm not getting onto the show floor or into any of the panels or the talk, so I'm gonna have to stream all that stuff after the fact.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for us, this has just been nonstop meetings, which is great.
Yeah,
obviously,
because
you know, we only eat what we kill, so. You know, we need as many meetings as we can.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that's when people talk to me about GDC, and I'm talking about a fan, a best friend watching the shows, I think they're like, well, is it like E3? And I'm like, no, right? Like, to me,
this is about camaraderie.
Right.
One of the things that's been great for me this week is being able to reconnect with, you know, I've been married 25 years, but I've been in the industry 27.
Oh, wow.
And so that, you know, I started at Nintendo, I was at Microsoft as well. And so I have all of these friendships that I've made over this time. And GDC is the place where you get to reconnect with those people.
Yeah.
And for me, this week too has been inspiring as I've been talking to other devs and hearing what they're working on and some of the struggles that they're having.
Sure.
That, you know, mirror things that we're going through. So that helps.
Yeah.
You know, misery loves company sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was at Day of the Devs talking to some people last night, and one of them was putting it as like, when we're here, our guards are down. Like, you know what I mean? It is this thing of, it's not the bravado of how you're doing or how big your team is or this project we can't tell you about. It is very much like you're over beers with people you know, and maybe they've brought friends that you don't know well, but you know, if they think you're cool, that's cool, blah, blah. And it is the, man, this is not working for us. Or we have this thing and it's been going great, but now it is not going great. Now
absolutely.
We figure this out.
Yeah, and publishers, we talk about you. Yeah, so.
I think there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's not a marketing event. Right.
Yeah.
E3 is a sales and marketing show with obviously amazing content present.
Sure.
And the devs are there in support of that. But that's really their show that we as developers go to support. But this is ours.
Okay. Well, Christian, I'm happy to have you back.
Well, thank you.
The stars aligned to give us a lot of industry news.
Yeah.
So there's stuff for you to talk about on a thing that I think we'd all be like, all right, cool. I don't know what that means for the industry. Is somebody trying to make stuff? But you'll have stuff to say. Because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, you need to be part of the show. KindaFunny.com/KFGD. Put in your questions, comments, concerns, bad PSN names, new segments, and everything else under the video game sun. Then you can watch us record it live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. It's to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up. However, today, Comcast has shit the bed. There is no internet in our area of San Francisco, so there will be no you're wrongs. You are free to correct us for tomorrow's show, but I probably will not read it unless it's a megaton we screwed up and said something like, Phil Harrison runs Xbox. Because I've been known to do that. Ooh. I slip in. I knew Phil Harrison so well. You know what
right.
I mean? He was out there talking about Little Big Planet for so long. And
yeah.
SingStar and Game 2.0.
Yeah.
He was ingrained in here. Flipping the switch of Spencer's heart.
What do you think now that he's at Google?
I think they're going to get hard about games pretty soon. They're going to have something to say.
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you think it's going to be? Is it going to be a console? Is it just going to be a platform?
I'll be interested to see if maybe it's not more about trying to impact lifestyle.
Okay. Yeah. Bring games right. to everybody the Google way.
Yeah, or maybe too, you know, leaning towards maybe some of the stuff that, you know, Jesse Schell is the most famous about talking the about the gamification of life.
Sure.
Right, and bringing that from a mixed reality perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, can't forget Google Glass did kind of come and go.
But I hold out hope
it's
that...
It's probably in the background still.
I hold out hope that the next time they come out for Google Glass, it's going to be like, cool, and we've partnered with Warby Parker, and this is what Google Glass looks like. It isn't this weird little tiny overlay with this giant battery pack. Because if it was glasses, I would be all in. I would love to have a heads-up display like that.
Yeah.
I digress. So, anyway. Even when the internet's down, we post the show over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe, including Spotify. Housekeeping for you. There's a new party mode up. It features Up Up Down Down's Austin Creed, a.k.a. WWE superstar Xavier Woods, a.k.a. the Commish. You can go get it right now, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. It is an amazing edit that made me very proud to know Andy Cortez. It would mean a lot to me. It would mean a lot to me if you went to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and gave us just that buck. That gives you a whole bunch of other access, early things to watch shows and all sorts of stuff, but gets you party mode today. And of course, that means that the PUBG one from last week is now up on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Click the bell so you never miss a video, as Austin says a lot. And we're sponsored by Brooke Linen and Hymns, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, Cool Greg, let's start the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Four items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Thank you. Number one, ID at Xbox is planning to added 300 indie games in a year. This is via gamesindustry.biz, who will pop up many a time in this episode. The ID at Xbox program is approaching its 800th title, less than 12 months since it hit number 500. ID at Xbox director Chris Sharla revealed the figure in an interview with GamesIndustry.biz ahead of his talk at this year's GDC in San Francisco. ID at Xbox is the name for Microsoft's initiative to attract and support independently made games on Xbox One and Windows 10. It was announced in August 2013, and the first game arrived in April 2014. The first 500 took just over 3 years to arrive. Although the number of games hitting the platform pales next to the number of games arriving on Steam and smartphones, it highlights just how fierce the competition is becoming on consoles for indies. Quote, for developers, discoverability is always going to be a super important issue, Sharla acknowledges. It's something we talk about all the time in terms of when to release a game, when to announce a game, how to announce a game, how to show a game before a release. That's a situation that's constantly changing. The formula that worked 5 years ago or even 18 months ago might not work today. So we just have to tell developers what the latest trends are, whether it's announcing super early or announcing closer to release. So we just share everything we know. That's a lot of games.
It's a ton of games.
Problematic.
When you,
yeah? When you look at it, I was going to say, what does that say to you? 800th title.
Well, if I was one of those, additional 300 that were coming in,
yeah.
I appreciate that Chris is acknowledging the discoverability, but that was the first thing that came to my mind when I heard the news. I was like, that's awesome. That's great. But how are you helping those independent developers with the very real challenge of discoverability? Yeah. It's, you know, it's next to impossible. And no one's getting it quite right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to find stuff, you know, to be discovered necessarily on the PSN without spending money.
Yeah.
Right. And that's really,
even then, that's tough, right? I mean, it is like, there's only a few featured spots in that store. In a we were talking about this yesterday with Danny. Dialing into the new releases on PSN isn't as easy as it should be. It is very hard. And then it is DLC on top of games, unless you want to sort. But how would you know to sort?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's not super intuitive. It's not as difficult maybe as some feel.
Sure.
But, you know, and
like you're saying, it's everybody's problem. Steam has too many games. The Switch every Thursday now has 18 games coming to it. Xbox has its own problem.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, just collectively from a console or a platform provider, right, in the digital sense for Steam, is it'd be great to see them opening up maybe tools that would allow indie developers, especially in these scenarios where, you know, these are indies that are self-publishing in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah.
Giving them some tools to be able to try and find ways to help drive discoverability. Obviously, I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't know if there is one, right?
Right. Like, there are far smarter people than me that crunch these algorithms and try and figure it out.
And it's the weird thing of with ID at Xbox, you assume it's the shotgun approach. It's what Adam Boyes used to always say about the press conferences on a very wide scale of like, yeah, we're going to put out, you know, 300 games coming up here to get us to this 800th title. But the hope is that tastemakers, like people like us, the people at IGN, the YouTuber X,
right,
are going to see a game in there that I'm going to write off. There, somebody else is going to see and be like, oh, I'm going to champion that. I'm going to be all about that. Because like it happened to me yesterday. I went to the ID at Xbox event here in San Francisco, and they had a whole bunch of awesome stuff, right? Yeah. But it was a room full of games. And it is that point, just like when I went to Indie Mix Night on Friday or Monday night here in San Francisco. I walk the aisles, look at every game for a little bit, and then figure out which are like the 3, 4, 5 that I need to go play.
Right.
Right. Because you can tell at a glance of, oh, that's a cool thing. Not my kind of game. Not what I need to demo right now. But like, you know, yesterday I jumped in and played Flipping Death. And that was after I walked around and I came back and I saw it and I was like, this art style is really good and the text seems really funny. To sit down and put them, I'm like, yep, this is totally up my alley and this is totally awesome. And then there was Earthfall. Yeah. I was walking around yesterday and I think it was Jeff Rubenstein who grabbed me, or Will Tuttle made me. It was just like, it's basically Left 4 Dead. And I went over and watched and played. I was like, yep, this is Left 4 Dead. I am all in. And so I left that event now, that ID at Xbox event, knowing those are the two games I'm going to talk about in the shows and those are the two games I'm going to talk about on Twitter. And hopefully everybody else in a perfect world went through that and saw the games that I was like, oh, not for me. That was for them, and they get to go do it. But you're not. It's so hard to like look at that, and I think everybody wants to be on Xbox Super Meat Boy, right? And have this amazing day, and we're on the top of the store, and everybody knows this and is watching us and playing this. And I don't know in 2018 how easy that is to do anymore.
It's hard. I mean, to your point, I mean, every week, Switch alone getting 18 titles, right? So that's a lot of noise happening on a weekly basis. I love what, you know, Jeff, in particular, I mean, he's a friend, full disclosure, but
Rubenstein?
I like that.
I hate him.
Do you?
No, I love him. Zombie Blognet, come on, original podcast.
But man, I love how, you know, they do broadcast, on their end, and, you know, they're actually creating content that's talking about games on a routine basis. So maybe it'd be interesting to see them maybe cycle some of these indie developers through and give them some camera time.
That could be the power of that Xbox show, right? Like, I think that as they keep doing that and they find their comfort level and where they go, they do have a platform to be like, yeah, here are the things. But it gets weird of then, is that their place as Xbox people to say, I'm profiling these four games? Because then there are hundreds of other games you're ignoring. And I don't know how to balance that. And I think that's what the official channels for anything run into, and that it gets a little bit of a struggle. Right?
Because
I've been on the blogcast a bunch of times, and you know, I think, you know, it's pretty clear they talk about things they like. They're not going to get critical about something. So then it does become like, how do you pick and choose? How do you play everything? And that's the other thing, is you can't do anymore, right? Even like me being a PlayStation guy and like, you know, having covered PlayStation forever. Every day we read games on here that I'm like, that's a weird title, and I never think or see it.
Right.
I never play it. I never think about it again, and I never see it in the store.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's impossible. What was that game yesterday with its a weird Minesweeper vibe that maybe was kind of porny? I don't know, but I don't even remember what it was called, and I'll never see it again.
Right.
Yeah. It's a struggle right now to try to be on top of everything. Because I remember, you know, you and I were dinosaurs here, right?
Video
games, you know? But I remember when I started in like 2007, 2008, like you could legitimately play everything. You could legitimately have, if you're covering one platform, totally, I could tell you about everything. I've touched this a little bit. I've done that a little bit, blah, blah, blah. But like PlayStation, once it all went digital, there was just this stream of content and games that you just can't keep up to.
It's an onslaught for sure. Yeah. Which is great on some level for the end, you know, for the fans and the end users. But if they don't know it's there and they don't know how.
Yeah, it's always for me, I you know, how many games do come out that should have been my cup of tea,
I kind of wish there was like a Goodreads, but for video games.
Sure.
Maybe there is, and I'm just ignorant.
Well,
so,
I mean, that's the thing.
In the comments,
like,
maybe?
The problem would be, right, is the fact that it exists. It's just so fractured, which I think's one of the powerful things, but I miss the callback to when it was an IGN platform team and you could listen to Beyond or Three Red Lights or whatever, and you could hear NVC. You'd know everything happening in that space, and we would have touched or played or had a preview of every game there.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, I think you have to go on YouTube, go to Patreon, go to a podcast service and be like, man, I love JRPGs, so I need to find the JRPG person that only reviews that stuff. And like, that's where it gets hard, and you see something that has to be mainstream, like Persona, like Ni No Kuni 2, that then breaks out of that and is everyone's talking about it, right? Everyone's talking about Monster Hunter right now because it's gone above and beyond what people expect from that genre. So even it's not the old classic preview of fans of the genre will appreciate, right? It's like, no, fans of video game will see something in this.
Yeah, I just like the idea. I mean, you know, I use the PSN in this fashion to, you know, folks like yourself where I'm PSN friends, I'll go and I'll see what games you've been playing,
right,
where you've been putting time when I'm trying to decide what I should tackle next, because there's so much. And that works, but it's kind of clunky because I don't think that that's the intended use per se.
Yeah.
Right. But it'd be nice maybe to have somebody who aggregates and just whitelists, you know, all those platforms, and you can then start finding like-minded people.
Yeah.
And see what they're playing.
It's the brave new world we all have to wrestle with and figure it all out, right?
Right.
And you just want to keep making stuff. You want to keep jumping in there.
Yes. Wah. Too many games, right?
Yeah.
Wah.
Yeah, way too many games. It's just not a perfect world. Ooh. Before I get to number two, Nick Scarpino from kindoffunny.com, you seem to have something to bring to the table.
Yes, thank you, Nick Scarpino.
Yeah.
Scarpino, yeah. I was wondering if anyone would like something from Chipotle.
Oh, sure. I'll have my normal. Thank you, my normal order. Christian, would you like anything from Chipotle?
No, I am good. Thank you very much.
You're a good man, Nick.
Yes.
Rough day around here. No internet. Everybody's panicking. Thank you, buddy. Number two on the Roper Report. Another one I want your opinion on.
All right.
There is a cool new Hollywood video game IP idea. We're back to gamesindustry.biz. Developers around the world now have access to a handful of classic silver screen properties thanks to a competition launched by Unity. The engine provider has partnered with NBC Universal to run the Universal Game Dev Challenge, which kicked off at GDC 2018 in San Francisco this evening. Also supporting the initiative are Microsoft and Intel, who will provide technical support and mentorship for the participants. The challenge is to create a new game concept based on one of the five Universal-owned IPs: Back to the Future, Battlestar Galactica, Jaws, DreamWorks, Voltron Legacy, Defender, and Turok. Developers have just 1 month to pitch a game concept via a design document and video, after which a panel of judges will choose six semifinalists. These studios must then create a vertical slice of their concept, competing for the grand prize later this year. The winner will receive $250,000 cash and a consulting contract with Universal, plus, of course, the task of evolving their slice into a full product. That is an awesome idea.
It is. It's clever. It's new.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's great. It's taking Game Jam and turning it outside.
Right.
I think it's an insanely great idea.
What I love about it is someone Universal in this, I think, understanding we have cool IP and what we don't need to go team up with EA, other AAA publisher, developer. We can go and find smaller indies and make smaller titles and turn them faster and probably make more money.
Yeah, and two, like with some of these IPs, it's entirely possible that this is maybe for them, they see it, Universal sees it more as a marketing, low-key marketing execution of trying to understand maybe where the next reboot might come.
Yeah.
Where there's an appetite for this IP amongst
gamers
that might translate into either a Netflix, right?
Yeah.
You know, how a lot of content is being created that way right now. So,
well, it's just, I feel like we've gotten so many licensed property games that are just not good in the past, right?
Yeah.
And then when AA fell away, like your THQs fell away, and we'll get to that in a second.
Sure. I love that topic.
Yeah, exactly. When those all fell away, you lost those licensed things. And so, on the one hand, it's been great because you get stuff like, hey, we're Marvel and let's team up with Insomniac and PlayStation and make Spider-Man, which looks like that's going to be fantastic.
Right.
Or, you know, let's play with the properties. Interesting. We're WB. Let's get Batman and make a whole series with Rocksteady. Awesome. But the problem is then I feel that people on that side of the industry, on the Hollywood side or IP side, sleep on the fact that I look at Insomniac and it was like, man, Sunset Overdrive, what a beautiful game with great gameplay that nobody played. You know what I mean? That just did not deliver because nobody cared about that IP. No, it was new. Nobody's into it. Right. But you take somebody, you see a game, you're like, man, you're a talented studio. I'd love to see you work with a property people care about. It's the same thing here of like, man, what would Drinkbox do with Battlestar Galactica?
Sure. Yeah.
What would IndieX Dev that you loved over here that's made something great do with Back to the Future? How do they expand that lore in a way that's more like Florence and not like Telltale, if we're just telling you this, a different story in this world. Like,
yep.
There's a million ways that like you could do something fun and different and outside the box and make a bigger splash, I think, than just going like, cool, we have a console PC game that's in this world, that's Jaws.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating.
No, really. I think it's great. I mean, I find it a little interesting that part of the reward is going to be a consulting gig with NBC Universal. So that should be interesting to see how that plays out. But everything about this is just great. And David, Jaffe.
Oh,
I know you're listening, bro. Let's get back on that horse, man. We need you.
What is he talking about? Not doing getting back on the horse?
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
We haven't heard anything from yet.
And, yeah, I missed totally. I was on vacation, or probably honestly, I was working. I don't think I was on vacation, but I missed the thing when it was like, oh yeah, well, we're closing up shop, and then it was later on the auction when they auctioned off all their stuff. I was like, wait, what is happening?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, David or others can correct me, but I think it was actually a giveaway. It was they weren't looking to raise money. They were actually just giving fans stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
That they could come by the studio and it was a way to just thank the fans for supporting Drawn to Death as much as they did, and for supporting obviously Bartlett Jones. So.
I mean, this is right up his alley because he put up that the little design doc they did of like, well, how they had a pitch for that they never actually had the license, but they thought of making an Iron Man VR game and talking to Jarvis through the VR headset. And I'm like, that is fucking amazing.
Exactly.
That's the kind of weird shit I would love to see.
Yeah.
I've played Back to the Future games. What can you do with that outside of the normal?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So I think this would be great. And this should be some interesting content coming.
Good. I hope they release it all. I want to see everything people submit.
Come on, David.
Number three on the Roper Report. Every tweet at David Jaffe, tell him this is for him. Number three, not number three, but the thing we were just talking about. You knew that, but I'm explaining over it was. Number three, Nintendo's killing it. I have two stories, both pretty brief, but in the wheelhouse there of Nintendo. Over on gamesindustry.biz, the only site we need to look at anymore.
Clearly.
The success of the Nintendo Switch continues unabated as the console handheld hybrid completed its first 12 months on the U.S. market. According to the data from the NPD group, the device has now achieved more year one sales than any other console in history. While no figure was specified, it's likely to be well over 5 million as Nintendo reported 4.8 million sales in the US by the end of 2017. However, PlayStation 4 remained the best-selling console in February as well as year-to-date. Also, with NPD starting to drop out Monster Hunter on top of the NPD list again for most popular game. Talk to me about that Switch.
It's an amazing console. I mean, my family bought me mine.
Yeah.
They've never, and trust me, games have put food in their stomachs, mm-hmm. clothes on their back. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I'm playing a game on a console, it's a lot of groans in my home, right? So the fact that they gave me a Switch when it released told me just how well Nintendo speaks.
Yeah.
Just on a broad basis.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's just, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. I take mine with me everywhere.
100%.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's funny what you're talking about. I remember when, you know, we were so dialed into the Switch and all this stuff, but I remember when I went back to Missouri before launch of Switch, and yeah, I think it was right after they put out the announcement of the name and the trailer and the, you know, them on the rooftop switching it up. And I went back to Missouri and hung out with some friends who have kids and have nothing to do with video games, and like young kids, not like these kids are finding out, like, you know, or watching videos. And she was just like, oh yeah, and what's this new Nintendo? And I was like, how do you know about this thing that just got announced last week? But that is Nintendo, that it permeates that way. And that was the canary in the coal mine of like, are they they have a chance to do this again? Is it going to get bigger than like we thought it was? Because I when I heard about it, I was like, that's a great idea. Weird presentation conference. We were like, and then it was like, when it got here, it was like, no, this is fantastic. And we love this and put everything on it.
Yeah, no, I think that too, you know, it's probably cyclical a bit in that a lot of those folks that bought the Wii and then, you know, maybe never bought more than one or two games or the Wii Fit, you know, for mom and dad at home. But they that same group is probably now...
They know about this, right? They've heard about it.
That's the great thing that, you know, I started my career at Nintendo. One of the things that I always loved is that they think about the end user experience so much and about making it truly accessible and approachable. At Sony, we'd spent, you know, countless hours, you know, on a daily basis, it felt like, trying to think about accessibility. Right. Like take a game like The Show, which to the uninitiated might feel super complicated with all the control schemes and everything. Right. So the way Nintendo is able to just deliver that simplicity.
Yeah.
I fucking love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome to see them doing well. It's awesome to see, I think, them again. I think the reason PlayStation was so successful with PlayStation 4 is doubling down on games and doubling down on gamers. Right. It wasn't. Yep. It definitely is a system that's for everybody, but it was very much like, here's obviously an amazing line, a first party lineup for year one. Here's all these awesome indies we're going to have it supported with. And that brought in other AAA partners now and third parties that are actually interested in it. And then yesterday, again, with them delivering on that Switch presentation again for an indies, like,
right,
they've got it, man. Yep. Speaking of all that, Kotaku has the top 10 indies on the Switch. These are in no particular order, but the top 10 best-selling indies on Switch from Damon Baker, of course, the guy leading up the Nindies charge over there. I'm not sure if Tim's announced this, but he's doing the Gamescast with us tomorrow. We're very excited. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can watch it for a buck if the internet's working by then. Anyways, no order. Here's what he says the top 10 best selling indies on the Switch are: SteamWorld Dig 2, Stardew Valley, Kamiko, Celeste, Fast RMX, Golf Story, Enter the Gungeon, Overcooked, NBA Playgrounds, and Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. Some great games on there. Celeste, come on now.
I'm surprised at NBA Playgrounds. The rest all makes sense. Not only just because it's, you know, sports and a little more more niche, but yeah.
Didn't have a rough launch too, if memory serves. Something happened. They had to patch it in later. But I think it was just it was like, hey, it's almost NBA Street. And everybody's like, oh, fuck. Yeah. I want that. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? I missed that
game. Yeah, that's great.
Because, yeah, if you can take something like that and make it, you know, accessible again,
right,
and make it interesting. But yeah, I'm happy to see Stardew on there, happy to see Celeste, happy to see Golf Story, happy to see Under the Gungeon, love Overcooked, obviously Shovel Knight, come on. But that's a good diverse selection, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Not just indies that we've heard about before or something. I'm glad to see something out there doing cool stuff.
Yeah, and as a developer, when I look at that and I see that breadth and that diversity, you know, we're looking to develop for Switch as well, and so that's, you know, always encouraging.
Yeah.
To see that appetite's there, because, you know, that's great that they have that many units, but if they're all to just play Super Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, of course, yeah. They have a attach rate for Odyssey and Zelda, and that's it, and they're gone.
Yeah, so that would be interesting to hear from someone like Damon is, you know, what... Is Nintendo planning to announce any tie ratios for that?
Yeah.
You know, that console install base? Because that'd be interesting to see.
Yeah. What I'm still fascinated about is I keep waiting for the bottom to fall out, like I was telling Danny, of like, cool, we're going to keep putting 18 of these Switch indies on there, Switch titles on there every Thursday. When do we see the story? I thought it would already have happened, but you keep seeing the story. Hey, this our Switch version has outsold all the other versions combined.
Yeah.
It's like, well, clearly Discovery is rough to an extent, but the cream is rising.
Yes.
People are seeing what they want. There are people out
there
championing stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Switch is such a fascinating beast right now.
I love it. I'll be curious to see, too, how many of those Switch handhelds are active.
Yeah, that are actually getting up and turning on and getting their firmwares and stuff. Yeah.
But, yeah, that's it. I love the speed.
Number 4 on the Roper Report. THQ Nordic is teaming up with Nickelodeon Kind. I mean, they're buying a bunch of stuff. And this, again... THQ Nordic, just dead set on being THQ again, and I don't fucking understand it, but I digress. Let's read the story. GamesIndustry.biz. In a continuation of its strategy to bring back the previous THQ portfolio, THQ Nordic has announced today the revival of multiple licensed Nickelodeon games. A total of 16 old titles will be returning for international sale, save The Fairly Odd Parents, which will be US only. The full list of returning games is as follows: Avatar The Last Airbender, Back at the... Barnyard, Cat Scratch, Danny Phantom, El Tigre, Invader Zim, Jimmy Neutron, My Life as a Teenage Robot. I think that's right. There's a comma in there, but I think that's something I've heard of before. Yeah. Rocket Power, Rocko's Modern Life, Rugrats, SpongeBob SquarePants, Tack and the Power of Juju, The Fairly Odd Parents, US only, The Ren and Stimpy Show, and The Wild Thornberries. Yeah, I thought that might get Cool Greg up and running. Yeah, hear about that one, Cool Greg?
Wild Thornberries?
I mean, just in general, the Nickelodeon games. What's your...
Danny Phantom's Yeah, that was a good show. My kids hit me to a lot of these.
I've been very vocal about THQ Nordic and that I don't understand what they're doing and why they've done anything, but Jared wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD just like you came to be part of the show, and I'll let him take it from here. Happy GDC to all. My question is, what the actual fuck is THQ Nordic? I remember when they first came out, people said they were doomed by associating their brand with a dead one, but here they are. Several game releases and a successful acquisition of Koch Media, and now, is it Koch? Koch Media?
Koch?
Koch Media? The Koch brothers?
In German, it's Koch.
Okay, Koch Media. And now they are bringing back Nickelodeon games from the dead. Do you guys have any insights to the mythical creature of a company? Because I can never predict what crazy thing they do next. P.S. We need a battle for Bikini Bottom on the Switch ASAP. You are in the industry. What is going on? What is THQ Nordic's plan here?
So, I guess I should caveat that I don't know the folks running.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
THQ Nordic. So I'm not really sure that I'm, well enough educated to know the money behind it.
Yeah.
But that's where I would start.
Okay.
Right. So I'm going to just make what I think is probably a safe assumption that it was initial investment money from outside the game industry that came in.
Okay.
Right. And so what they're looking to do is build value very quickly. One of the quickest ways you can do that is with branding.
Okay.
Right? Good or bad, we're talking about them right now.
Yeah.
They get your attention. Anytime they put out a piece, you come and you rant about them.
So I do, yeah.
So they're getting the minutes, right? You're giving them clout.
Okay.
You're giving them clout, as the kids say, I hear.
Yeah, they do. Right? A lot of kids on the street talking about clout.
Yeah, well, they're, so they're finessing you for some clout. Okay. I'm just trying to sound cool.
Now
though.
You're just doing it. Yeah, you're doing it. You're doing
anyway,
it.
But yeah, I think that's probably a big part of it, right? So they do that. And then there is an unserved market right now for these titles. No one else is building them.
That's what I'm saying, right? There is none of that mid-tier stuff. The licensing mid-tier stuff has gone away.
Yeah, and so it was oversaturated before. THQ really was king of that space, right? So it would make sense that if investment money is coming from the outside and there's the ability to latch on to a brand that was king in that space and you see a vacuum now and you're trying to fill that void, why not? It's the best I could do.
I just feel like we're in such a different place in the industry where it's like, I think the indies and people being creative are doing so well that like, unless they're going to, don't get me wrong, it'd be rad if they get all these properties and stuff and they're like, you know what? We're taking an awesome indie developer and they're making it a Rugrats game of how they, okay, great. But I worry more it's going to be these old school Dora the Explorer games that were just like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
And why am I reviewing that?
Okay, well, yeah, and that's fair too. I think that what'll be interesting is to see what is their approach to tapping developers.
Yeah.
Right? Mobile development right now is, I was in a gathering of, leaders of independent development companies at the start of the week. And one of the comments that came out of it was that mobile development is up 3x.
Oh, wow, really?
So at that point, you start asking yourself, well, why am I doing it for handsets?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Why? And you look at the success of Switch, and you look at how the Switch SKU, for a lot of people, over-indexes over any other SKU. So then it starts maybe creating a whole new pool of development talent that you can tap into.
Okay.
Folks who are super well-versed and skilled in understanding mobile development, free-to-play and games as a service, business models, things like that, that have chops and with the strength of engines now like Unity and Unreal that cross over between console and mobile, it allows them to very quickly, I think, get teeth in console development. So it's got to be a market that's not served.
It's going to be fascinating. I mean, as long as they don't make you draw again, I guess they'll be all right. Like, that's what
investment dudes, all they're doing is building a 5-year plan to then sell. Right? So they got to build. And so they're going to build up the portfolio. They're going to build all this value. And then we'll see what they do with the company.
Okay. Stay tuned, everybody. Stay tuned. I'll tell you what. I do hope that we get SpongeBob Bikini Battle for Bikini Bottom over on Switch.
Oh, yeah.
But if we do, Christian, it's going to happen so long from now.
Yes.
If I wanted to know what came to the digital mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
Where would you go? The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
I miss Kevin. And not that you're doing a bad job, Cool Greg, but you know, that's when me and Kevin make eye contact. We do the yeah together. Kevin deserves a day off, though. Out today, you can get Bridget.
Or is it Brigitte?
Brigitte. I don't know. The newest support character for Overwatch is now available on PC, PS4, and Xbox One as part of Blizzard's next update for the game. Bad Dudes is on Switch. Lunar Stone, Origin of Blood, is on PlayStation VR. The Count Lucanor. The Count Lucanor is on Xbox One. Where Are My Friends is on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. That sounds interesting. And then World of Warriors is also on PlayStation 4. And I got no new dates for you. That's a rare one. I didn't see anything popping off today. I'm getting sick of these people announcing their games are coming, and they're like, it's coming springish. I'm like, no, that's not really an announcement. Give me the date.
Yeah.
You know, don't press release me on this unless you have a date. Annoying. Of course, they could be annoying like Insomniac, though, and just say nothing. Just say nothing. Let us all twist in the wind. Now it's time for reader mail. But first, I'm going to tell you it's brought to you by Brooklinen and Hims. Let's talk about brooklinen.com. You spend a third of your life in your sheets. You need to make a difference with how you start sleeping. So why not start sleeping on some better sheets? Brooklinen.com is an amazing little site that gives you great sheets. I am sleeping on them now. I can tell you this. They're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty. They take good photos when I put Porty on them. You go to Instagram.com/GameOverGreggy. You see Porty on the bed. That's a Brooklinen sheet. What I liked about them, Christian, was the fact when you go to the site, you pick, you know, what size bed you have.
Sure.
And then you start going between the colors, and they start changing the sheets as you click on everything. Mm-hmm. So you can see what the sheets look like with the comforter. And as I've said, what I did is I was able to put it with the white comforter with the blue navy dots on it and then the navy sheets. And then I just brought it home, and I knew it looked good. Jen thought it looked good, and she was impressed. I knew how to do it without her help.
You're a style maven.
You know what I mean? I'm a renaissance man, as they say. There's no unnecessary markups and fees with brooklinen.com. Of course, most betting is marked up as much as 300%. Brooklinen, you can match and mix to complement any decor. This is luxury betting, underpriced, and you have to try these sheets today. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive officer just for, offer, not an officer, just for my listeners. You can get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code GAMESDAILY at brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use the promo code GAMESDAILY at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code GAMESDAILY. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. A strong tagline, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Next sponsor, Hims. Did you know 66% of men lose their hair by the age 35? But the thing is, once you notice, it's too late to do anything about it. That's why Hims is here to fix it. You struggling?
I feel incredibly fortunate. I'll be 49 this year. Thank you. And I think I'm going to hold on to what I got.
You look
good. I'm good.
You look good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Nick is terrified of losing his hair because he's already lost a whole bunch of it. So what he did is he's doing Hims right now. Him and Andy signed up for Hims. Of course, Hims does the hair stuff. It does personal care products. It does male stuff. And then you go on the thing. You send them photos of yourself if you're doing the hair stuff. They tell you they have like the consulting thing. They talk to you. If you need actual medication from it, they'll link you up with a doctor that you can do consulting online stuff. Then they send it to you. So that's what 4Hims is all about. It's a solution. 4Hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Another great line. Not a tagline, but a good line.
That is good.
Him connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. You, my listeners, can order now and get a trial month of 4Hims just for $5. Right now, while supplies last, you have to see the full website for details. This would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or pharmacy. So go to 4hims.com/gamesdaily. That's FORHIMS.com/gamesdaily. 4hims.com/gamesdaily. They don't have an impressive tagline yet.
I don't know, man. Their baldness is optional.
That's pretty good.
Right?
That was
pretty hims, tight. Yeah.
Baldness is optional.
Yeah. Thanks to science. I'm a fan of science.
Science is pretty cool. You know what I mean?
It's kind of my jam.
Here, let's do this. This isn't even a question as much as a shout out from George.
All right.
George writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, "Hey Greg, No question here. Just wanted to give you a heads up, as you've spoken about it on the show previously. WWE has announced that their most recent pay-per-view is available in VR via the Next VR app. Thought this may interest you, depending on response, it could definitely be a factor that gets me to hop on the VR train. I will definitely check that out. I know the Next app, they partnered up with WWE to put moments on there. I didn't realize the whole PPV was up there. You're in this VR space.
I am.
How is it going?
It's actually going well, very well. I think that, you know, what we've been seeing inside the PSVR effort that we did with Sony on Star Blood Arena, as well as some of the VR work that we do outside of there that has to do with non-game entertainment consumption, is it's everything's moving forward. I got an appointment to be able to check out the Santa Fe demo from Oculus, their untethered headset. So looking forward to checking that out this week. Because that's the next step.
Yeah,
we've got to get to the point where we're not tethered.
Yeah, there's no barriers to entry,
absolutely,
right? Because that's my thing of like, do I want to drag the cables out and move the couch or move the coffee table and do all these different things? If it's just sitting off to the side, right, and you pop it on, okay.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, at Whiteman we mess around a lot with the VR tech. We're really focused on user comfort. That is a big reason for Starblood for us. Is, you know, we wanted to make sure that when we give 6 degrees of freedom of movement, that it doesn't make you sick.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not at Sony anymore, so I can say that now.
Yeah. Of course.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we're really we're spending a lot of time working on locomotion. And being able to walk around in first person.
Yeah.
And we got it feeling amazing. Great demo that we brought to GDC that we're showing.
Okay.
So it's great.
Has VR met your expectations, exceeded them, underperformed? Like you were obviously at PlayStation when they started shopping this idea around, right?
Yeah. No, I was fortunate that I was allowed to be, included in the very initial conversations when Mick Hawking, who really championed it initially, and then Shu obviously stepped up and became the real banner leader for that initiative. Yeah, in San Diego, we had people that were obsessed with the VR space. And so we were able to commit time from us and everything from giving feedback on the design of the headset to helping with the firmware and the SDK.
Okay.
And so back to your question, I think it's meeting my expectations. I'm a little worried that maybe some of the big investors in this space might get a bit of cold feet.
Sure.
But I think that what we need are moments like these, right? Where we're bringing entertainment content to a VR experience that's not necessarily game, that then helps people understand that this is a great way to be able to consume it. It's not, you don't have to just play games, I guess.
Right.
Now.
No,
and
100%.
It's amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was super, when WWE announced this, we put it in here and we were talking about it. And I was like, this is what I've been saying, blah, blah, blah. And I was shocked that some people wrote into you wrong, being like, well, no, the Next VR app already does that with NBA games. Like,
yeah.
You can, I was like, how do I not know this?
Yeah.
As a guy who's actually excited about VR, does the PlayStation VR show, like, where, how is that getting lost in the shuffle that, hey, this device you have that you think about right now, somebody who bought it as, every so often there's a cool game or there's a cool experience and I'll put it on. There's a really cool experience happening right now that might be in your wheelhouse depending on what your outside games interests are.
Absolutely. If you're a baseball fan, the folks at MLB.com and MLB Advanced Media, it's that same entity, they're first and foremost, they're technologists that happen to love baseball.
Yeah.
And the work that they've been doing in VR is, I think, really impressive as well. A lot of getting to be in the stadium and be able to just pick a seat and see what the view is going to be from the seat before you buy it.
Yeah,
is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
To be able to watch a game in VR, I think, is cool. To be able to be on the field for batting practice because they've got the 360 cameras set up, right? The stuff that they're doing to engage with fans through VR, I think, is setting them up to be way ahead of all the other organized sports.
And that's why, I've talked about it enough for listeners.
So shout
out
to Jamie Leese.
What up, Jamie Leese? Good job. I know I've talked about it, so I don't want to beat a dead horse for everybody who listens to everything we do, which is a lot of you, and we thank you. But like the fact that the PlayStation E3 or PSX conference doesn't have a here's front row VR cam, here's a cam backstage or on the side, here's a cam we put up with the microphone so you can see what it's like. Because like I'm lucky enough and you're lucky enough that we've been on those stages. We know what that feels like and looks like, and it's an incredible feeling. And I think it'd be awesome to let somebody go up there and be that person while
absolutely
whoever plays Last of Us or whatever, Shuhei says something.
Right.
And like I think it's such a cool value add to this device of like, we're supporting it with games. We're, you know, we want developers to be a part of it, but we're also on our own doing these cool things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like VR.
Good stuff.
I hope it sticks around.
We're doing our best to make that happen.
Well, we'll make sure whenever you can actually announce any of your gosh darn games. You gosh know, Addison Scott, PSN Juggle Man, writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says he has a possible solution for crunch. And I'd like your opinion on this.
Oh,
I'm currently reading through the story from The Verge about Telltale and video game development in general, and it got me thinking. Did you see this Verge story yesterday? We put it out as required reading here.
Yeah.
The article discusses crunch time at video game studios and how crunch destroys developers' mental, physical, and social health. With the recent popularity of inclusion riders in the movie industry, can something similar be done in the games industry, but related to crunch time instead of diversity? Could media outlets say something like, quote, we will only create content for games that are developed by companies that provide a written statement that their employees work no more than XX hours per week? Is that a solution to crunch time? Mario time, as some call it.
All due respect, no.
Yeah.
But I understand the spirit of what they're saying, and I sure. think that they're looking in the right direction, but yeah. I don't know that that's necessarily the solve. What I love, and you know, this is how I am at work as well, is, you know, I'm not really interested in shots across bows when you point out problems. If you can't at least come with a possible
solution,
fix, it doesn't have to be the right one, but at least show that you're thinking about fixing it, not just complaining.
Not so, just walking and be like, this sucks.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that this is great. I think that movie industry can get away. Well, not get away. That sounds wrong, right?
But it's easier to institute, I would say. Yeah. It's easier to institute, right, because of unions.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going. Yeah. So we're not a union industry. Probably never will be.
Yeah, so every so often it seems like it gets kicked up. Somebody's talking
like,
about
yeah,
it.
There'll be a little talking, then I think for the most part. Now it'll be interesting for me to see it and think about it from the development side
sure.
and being a developer. But I think that, you know, really at the end of the day, what could happen is fans could vote with their wallets,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, but it's hard to really know the kind of hours that people put in until a company starts building a reputation for itself, right?
Yeah.
I think EA slugged its way out of a horrible reputation for the type of hours they put yeah. people through, when in reality they weren't any worse than anyone else.
Yeah.
They just got the spotlight shown on them,
yeah.
unfortunately. So really a lot of this comes down to folks on the development teams themselves and understanding how to maybe improve your project management methodologies, right?
Yeah.
Be able to plan out better. But it is the one thing that I have to leave, because, and this is why I guess ultimately I said in such definitive fashion no as to this as a solve, is you're never going to be able to really put an actual cap on number of hours that you need to create a piece of entertainment, art.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
This is experiential. It's new. It didn't exist before. And there's a ton of discovery. And discovery leads you down new hallways and rat holes, unfortunately.
Right. And
sometimes.
That's what slows it down.
And
right?
That's what slows it down. So what helps in those moments is actually for us as developers to focus back on how are we approaching it, and are we being disciplined in those moments of discovery?
Yeah.
Right. So,
because as an outsider, that's the thing we all, as video game fans, video game consumers, I think the level of educated gamer, like people who watch this show or listen or read or, you know, that want this story, that aren't just buying the box, playing it and never thinking about it. The people who are engaging this kind of discussion, it is just that balancing act of, we want the best game you can make, but we don't want you to kill yourself, but we do want it when we want, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's this give and take all the time of, yep. I feel like I've been lucky enough to go behind the scenes and interview developers and do all this stuff, and it seems like every studio that I've been to recently and talked to somebody about crunch time, right? They're like, well, not really, but what it is, are you getting your work done? And
yeah.
for some people, that means they come in at 7 in the morning and they work till they leave at 7. Some means they come in right before lunch and they're here till 3 in the morning. Like, it's like you're saying, a creative space. How do you get creative juices flowing? How do you do that? And then, yeah, how do you say, all right, cool, this is the release date. We have to go gold here. But as you go, you figure out, oh, whoa, the animations look way better if we do this.
Right.
How do we make that happen and then still meet that?
And sometimes, and this has happened to me a lot over my career, a hook in the gameplay mechanic surfaces just through discovery. And then you go, oh, shit, let's chase that a little further.
Yeah.
What could that look like if we spend a little bit more time on it? And who knows when that moment's going to surface.
Sure.
But when it does,
you got to do it for the,
as a creator, there's no way that you leave it untouched. You go, no, I gotta suss this out.
And I feel like that's another thing I hear from every developer, right? Is like, when they're done with a game, they're never done.
No.
There's always a million things wish they could have done. They know where the bugs are. They know what's wrong. They know how this works.
Oh, hell
it's
yeah.
just, yeah, it had to ship. It had to go. Because otherwise you would work on it forever.
No game's ever done.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Video games. They're great. Let's see this. I feel like we answered, but I'm going to my dog Nick 96 from Massachusetts writes in all the time, so I want to give him this one. He says, what up, KFGD crew? I'm an avid gamer and consumer of the market. As someone who has attended conventions, I can understand the joy of going to one. What makes GDC so special for you? Have a great GDC. My dog Nick 96. Is that camaraderie you talked about?
Yeah. I didn't realize how thirsty I was for some industry love.
Yeah.
Until I got here Monday, and then I just started bumping into person after person.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, and the hugs were plentiful and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh shit, that's right.
Yeah.
This is so awesome. I drove up, Sunday night from San Diego with all of our equipment.
Yeah.
And I got here and I was grumpy and
of course.
Tired.
And yeah.
Within 20 minutes, I was grinning like a little kid
because
I'd seen a half dozen people I haven't seen in a couple years, maybe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's that industry camaraderie.
I'm always so blessed to be at a GDC because obviously I'm not a developer. But what I love the most about it is the genuine excitement you all have for either showing your game or talking about it. Like last night, I went to Day of the Devs at Alamo Drafthouse, right?
Yeah.
And that's such an awesome, amazing experience of these small indie devs. You know, some of them are large people. Anyways, them coming up onto this stage, the Alamo Drafthouse, Theater One, the big theater, having their game on a movie theater screen, playing it up there. And when a joke hits and everybody laughs, or when people clap when something goofy happens, and watching them
magical.
Light up in their excitement of talking to you about this game and being excited.
Yeah.
And they can't believe they're showing this game to somebody, let alone in a movie theater. Like, that's for me GDC in a nutshell, right?
Yep.
But then I go out for drinks and I run in, like you're saying, to people I know that are developers, and then other people show up and they break out their phones and they're so excited to show each other this new cinematic or this model we just made and all these different things of like, that's what it's about, right? And that's what I love seeing that, because like, I think we're not cursed or anything, but like, what we see, and I'm hitting myself as a consumer, right, is the, oh, here's this story about Telltale problem, or what's going on at this developer, or there's layoffs, or the game's out, congratulations, that's great, and here, it's gone gold, and they're holding up the, you don't hear the stories and see the enjoyment and see them actually be together and have a moment, and that's what GDC is every year. It's the moment of just like creators being together, and it's not the E3 moment that's also awesome. The E3 moment after a PlayStation press conference is awesome, but it's also the heads of PlayStation, including marketing and this and the other stuff that like respect the game developers, but it's not the environment artist so excited that somebody just told them their environments are awesome.
Or that the lighting that was in this game was just surreal, right? The shaders written, things that at the end of the day fans care about, but they're not going to instinctively go to versus here. It's great to be able to run into friends that work on games like Fortnite as an example.
Oh my gosh,
right? And to be able to go, fuck, congrats.
right.
And on an iPhone, are you fucking kidding me right now? Wow, right? Like, to be able to have those moments because they're so sincere and real, and to get that kind of response from someone who's in the trenches too, doing this shit on the daily.
Respect.
Right. And for them to just be like, oh my God, and fanboy out a little bit.
Yeah.
That's the other great thing for me too, is to be able to come and fanboy out.
Good.
Yeah.
Let's kick it
like
over
being here.
To Shane at kindoffunny.com/KFGD, who writes in and says, what's up, kind of funny bros? I was so happy to hear the positive first reactions for God of War. Firstly, because I'm excited to play it, but secondly, because I pre-ordered the Stonemason Edition that has the cool statue and collectibles. I like displaying nerdy collectibles of things I like. I have so many that I swap them out and do themes. My question is, how are your guys' collecting habits? Do you resist getting collectibles for any reason? Are there any collector's editions you regret skipping? I regret canceling my Horizon one last year and opting for the standard one instead. As always, thanks for what you do and keep up the awesome work, Shane. How has it worked for you? You've been in the industry forever.
Yeah.
At one point, did you turn off the idea of like the collections and the swag and the knickknacks?
Yeah, I realized pretty early on that if I wasn't careful, I'd just be buried. I have slight hoarder tendencies, to police myself. So I'm pretty lucky. I try, to be honest with you, I actually try to limit it to games that I've actively worked on.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Right? I just feel like I'm still a fan of all the other, you know, opportunities that come along. But for me, it's almost more of a trophy moment.
Yeah. Right?
That I can go, hey, here's a product. So, you know, although I didn't work on the show that's coming out here at end of month, but I pre-ordered that.
Hell yeah. Yeah, for me, I remember, growing up, I'm collecting comics and toys and all this stuff. It's like my dad's attic is packed with long boxes full of things that one day I'm going to have to figure out what to do with. But when I moved to, when I went to college and then when I went to San Francisco, like, there's just no room. It's been a blessing in the way I had to get over that. And I don't, and even when I buy comics now on singles, I'll give them away of like, cool. Like, I mean, not the Comixology stuff I keep my trades together, but like video game collector's editions, I used to be so excited for, but it's just so rare to get an awesome one.
Right.
And usually when it is, it's one part of one that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, I think of like when DC Universe Online was going to put out its collectors, you're like, yeah. And I got it in the Batman statue. It was like all plasticky and like chintzy. You're like, oh, well, this isn't that great. You know what I mean? And then it would keep happening of like, well, there's going to be this one. Oh, well, like that infamous one, like, oh man, like you get a statue. It's like not that great. And then they made the real ceramic ones that were nice and awesome.
Those are nice.
But like the infamous 2 collector's edition, right? Like, why does that have longevity? Because the bag they gave you is actually a really great bag. And I have 2 in my closet that are like when I need a shoulder bag, snap it on and go. Like, I like the stuff that's, you know, has a utility to it. There's going to be a reason for me to use it. Statues and stuff only go so far. And like, I usually toss those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or give them away when I say toss. I don't just throw stuff away usually.
Yeah, which is what Bartlett Jones did.
Yeah.
Give them
exactly.
Away.
Exactly. Yeah. Full circle.
Giving it back.
Speaking of which, Justin writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Stick with me. I'll get to why it's a speaking of. Yeah. It's me again. I didn't read it the first time. I'm sorry, Justin. Oh, I'm not mad anymore. I did. Justin thought he'd be real cute and be mad and like submit a million different questions.
Oh.
And Justin's questions didn't even get fucking read.
Wow.
Justin, though, he came with a real question and says, did you get to play Dying Light Bad Blood yesterday? If so, how was it? Thanks, XOXO Justin. I did. Went down to GDC, played Dying Light Bad Blood yesterday. It's actually really, really cool. Did you like Dying Light the first time around? Did you play it? Did you have time?
I did not.
Okay, so Dying Light, we've all talked about it, and I think, honestly, in one day when I write my book, no one will read. And I'm not going to do
it. I'll read it.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I think Dying Light was the first example of like, oh man, if you put out a game in like end of January, beginning of February, people are starving for games and they will buy it like and give a chance they never did.
Yeah.
And we've seen it since with so much stuff. Monster Hunter this year being, I think, the key example here. Resident Evil really performing and getting outside of people who are just horror fans. I digress though. Dying Light was awesome, right? Because of it's parkour. It was, you know, first person zombie game.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. It's a first person zombie game, but it was the fact that the free running parkour, you felt so powerful and engaged, and it had this flow to it that was great. And so was the combat and all this different stuff. And it was just Techland doing great stuff. Dying Light Bad Blood is this new multiplayer game they're putting out, which is all the stuff that was awesome about Dying Light with the free running and the weapon crafting and all that jazz. But it's you and 5 other players, so 6 players total. The idea is that you're on the map, zombies are everywhere, you have to collect zombie samples from them, blood samples, and then get them and then extract out in a helicopter. The catch is the helicopter only has 1 seat. So you're playing and you're fighting the zombies, but you can turn on each other at any point and fight each other. You not work together, you can't work together. Like, eventually you're gonna have to turn on each other. When somebody actually gets enough samples, the helicopters are called in, they go to the evac zone. You have to wait on the evac zone, I think, for 30 or 45 seconds. And that's when everybody else comes at you now. Now it's, you know, player versus player.
Yeah.
If I kill you, I can pick up your blood samples and add them to mine and go on this way. It was really fun. I really had a great time with it. I'm excited to get it for party modes with the guys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Where I said I'd get back to how this ties into what we're talking about.
Yeah.
They gave me, it's always that thing where like, I've been doing this a long time. So like when they're like, oh, don't forget like the press swag bag. You're like, oh, no, I feel really rude saying no. So I'll take, and it was this giant Dying Light tin or whatever.
Yeah.
And I got back up and I opened it and it was like, all right, the t-shirt, a bandana. And then there was a couple other things and they put in there this flashlight that's also a beacon and has like a magnet on it. So like, it's like keeping your trunk. And if anything ever goes wrong, right, use this flashlight and then put it there. I was like, all right, kept that and gave away the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, cool, sorry, I'm never going to want to rock a Dying Light bandana. I know that's awesome for so many fans out there and things like that. It wasn't my cup of tea, so I found people on the way out to get to you. But there you go.
Love it.
Full circle. Christian.
Yes, sir.
It's time to squad up. This is where somebody writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, giving me their name, username, platform of choice, and why they need help in a video game. I read here, the best friends come and find you, and everybody plays games together as one big, awesome community. Today, Marissa needs help on Xbox One. Her gamer tag, MDarcy93. Why she needs help in a video game? She says, yarr, for that plentiful booty in Sea of Thieves. So if you're playing Sea of Thieves, hit up MDarcy93 and join her lovable pirate crew.
Arg.
Now, usually we would do your wrong in a second. I'd get the iPad out and show it to you. We can't do it. I assume we were 100%. But I do have a follow-up to yesterday's segment, Required Reading. More Required Reading. C. Flickster wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, related to yesterday's required reading and the follow-up question about fostering creativity, I would like to propose another required reading. A book titled Creativity, Inc., written by Ed Catmull, the president of Pixar, it's an account of how to run a company of creative people and avoid the obstacles created by the work environment itself, despite even the best intentions that squelch creativity. A good book, I think, for you in particular, Mr. Greg Miller, as well as the community of content creators within The Best Friends. Sincerely, Cody Flick. Have you read Creativity, Inc.?
10 out of 10.
Yeah?
Ed Catmull went to high school with my pops. But
oh, really?
So he sent me the book. And I was just like, I rolled my eyes and I started reading. And I was like, this is a really good read.
Friend of the show, world famous bartender, Eric Castro, Polite Provision, San Diego, tells me every time we're together to read this book. And I bought this book on iPad and I'm too busy working and making all these people work probably the wrong way to read the book to figure out how to make them work better.
Get it on Audible.
Ooh.
I was having a hard time dedicating time to reading, and I found that I was having to go back and up, and then I was just like, fuck, why don't I just get it on Audible?
Okay.
And boom,
there you go. Yeah,
took all care right of it.
So that's a good one. Thank you. More required reading is always good. Like I said, no, you're wrong. Usually we'd ask you to do that, but we can't, so we were right about everything. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, you can usually watch it live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can always watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listen later on podcast services around the globe, including Spotify. Tomorrow, GDC week continues. Jason Schreier himself from Kotaku will be here.
Nice.
First question, are you mad that we just read your stories, thus taking down your view counts? We'll see. We'll see what he thinks of that. Christian, thank you. You're great. You've always been a friend. I'm so glad you can come on the shows and do stuff with us.
You guys' friendship's awesome, man. I really appreciate the opportunity to come in and hang out. It's
fun. What can the best friends do for you right now? Your other game's not announced yet. Should they just all go play Star Blood Arena?
Yeah, you know what? For any of you who pulled it down when it was a PS Plus giveaway, jump on, play Wednesday nights, the community organized. Sunday nights, the community organizes play sessions.
What, for a nutshell, what is Star Blood Arena?
Star Blood Arena is, think of it as a first person shooter where there is no up.
Okay. That's a good way to put it. All right. Well, is that not entice you enough? Tim, does that entice you?
Entice me.
That's what I like to hear.
8-player PvP. Get in there. Light it up.
All right.
Christian,
I love you.
I love you.
Ladies and gentlemen, until next time. It's been our pleasure to serve you.
R.I.P. Gus.